Environmental groups asked the U.S. Department of Transportation to immediately ban crude oil shipments in older rail tank cars. Good evening. That's our top story on Montana Evening Edition. I'm Conrad Scheib.
And I'm Corin Cates Carney. We'll also tell you about how much the parent company for Glacier Park, Inc. is paying for land and businesses around West Glacier. And Edward O'Brien talks with organizers of a new ad campaign about the value of the West National Parks and public lands.
Two environmental groups are asking the U.S. Department of Transportation to immediately ban shipments of volatile crude oil in older railroad tank cars, citing recent explosive oil train wrecks and the department's own findings that those accidents pose an, quote, imminent hazard, unquote. The petition filed today by the Sierra Club and Forest Ethics seeks an emergency order within 30 days to prohibit crude from the Northern Plains Bakken region and elsewhere from being carried in the older tank cars, known as DOT 111s. Accident investigators have reported the car's rupture or puncture, even in wrecks at slow speeds. The Obama administration has said it will propose a new rule this month governing tank cars, which could include retrofits of older model cars and tougher standards for new ones. But the petition notes it could take a year before a rule is finalized. In the meantime, the groups say the shipments are putting small towns and major cities along the rail lines at risk. Transportation Department spokesman Ryan Daniels said the agency cannot comment on whether an outright ban is under consideration because a formal rulemaking process for the older tank cars already is underway.
In other news from around the state, the parent company for Glacier Park, Inc. is paying $16 million for just over 200 acres of land and businesses in and around Glacier National Park. The Hungry Horse News reports that the Viad Corp. reported the sales price plus $1 million for inventory in recent corporate filings. For nearly seven decades, the Lundgren family owned 200 acres in West Glacier, along with several businesses and another nearly 4 acres in Apgar with a lodge, gift shop, and staff housing. Glacier Park, Inc. ran Glacier National Park's visitor services for over 3 decades before losing a bid for the latest 16-year contract to Zantara Parks and Resorts, Inc. GPI also owns and operates St. Mary Lodge and Resort, Glacier Park Lodge, and Motel Lake McDonald in and around Glacier Park.
As we just mentioned, the Lundgren family ran the bulk of West Glacier businesses for 7 decades. As of last Friday, employees of those businesses got paychecks from a new boss, the Viad Corporation. The Arizona-based company runs several hotels and businesses in the area and had been the concessions contractor for the in-park hotels for 30-plus years before losing the contract to Zantara last year. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry has more from the new boss in West Glacier.
Very pleased. How are you today?
Good, how are you?
Very good, thank you.
Cashier Kathy Volk rings up a new order at the West Glacier Mercantile.
They buy a little of everything. They're really healthy buying things, too, with fruits and different things for camping and hiking and snacks on the rafting trips. And
next to Volk at the checkout stand, Karen Leitz is bagging people's purchases and checking to make sure they have all they need.
Maybe a few napkins. You do look pretty neat, though.
Leitz says she's been working at the West Glacier Merc for 17 years. She says people have a lot of questions about where to hike, places to stop, things to see. But recently, there's been a new question.
With the changing of ownership, they want to know how it's going. It's going very well. They've been very good.
The Lundgren family owned many of the familiar brown and yellow chalet-style buildings and businesses in West Glacier for 70 years. They recently sold to Glacier Park Incorporated for $17 million. Vice President and General Manager for GPI, Ron Cadrett, points out the businesses that are part of this acquisition.
We have West Glacier Gifts, West Glacier Mercantile, which is a grocery store here in West Glacier, the gas station across the street that we're looking at now, West Glacier Motel, which is just to our left here, as well as the West Glacier Cafe. And then in the Apgar Village, there's a Cedar Tree gift shop and the Apgar Village Lodge that we also purchased.
There's not much you can see that isn't now part of GPI. The sale also includes almost 200 acres of undeveloped land in West Glacier.
We don't have any current plans for it right now. We've been mostly focused on closing in on this acquisition and then operating the business for the summer.
GPI was the park concessionaire operating the in-park hotels like Lake McDonald Lodge and Many Glacier Hotel, among others, for the past 32 years. It lost out to Zanterra when the contract came back up for renewal. Zanterra took over operations in January. GPI still operates the Prince of Wales Hotel in Waterton Lakes National Park, connected to Glacier on the Canadian side of the border, the Motel Lake McDonald in Glacier, Glacier Park Lodge in East Glacier, and Grouse Mountain Lodge in Whitefish.
This is a perfect fit for, and complements our other gateway properties very well. West Glacier Mercantile is a wonderfully run business model. It has a great team of individuals, and it complements our overall operations very well.
Concerns have been raised over GPI taking over both the businesses and, particularly, the undeveloped land in West Glacier. A page launched on the social media site Facebook called Save Historic West Glacier Village, Montana, started at the beginning of June and garnered more than 900 followers. On the page, it calls for GPI to publicly pledge to maintain local livelihoods by hiring locally and paying living wages, preserve the undeveloped land in line with existing zoning regulations, and work with the community and elected officials to get the village on the National Register of Historic Places. Cadrette says for this year, just about the only thing that employees should see change is who is issuing their paychecks.
Our quote this year is pretty much business as usual. And looking at the future, I don't really have any plans that I can share. We haven't started working on those yet.
As the park hotel concessionaire, GPI was required by the Park Service to preserve the historic integrity of the hotels. Cadrette says that preservation of the historic buildings remains an important part of their infrastructure. As far as future plans for the undeveloped land, time and planning and zoning will tell. Katrin Fry reporting from the Flathead.
Organizers of a new ad campaign are betting national parks and land conservation in general are of great value to the vast majority of people. The Denver-based Center for Western Priorities have launched the Winning the West campaign to, among other things, demonstrate the public policy leaders that national forests and parks are held dearly by most Americans. The Center for Western Priorities describes itself as a nonprofit, nonpartisan group that works on various land, water, and community issues throughout the West. Advocacy Director Jessica Goad tells Edward O'Brien that conservation is, as she put it, a popular and winning issue throughout the region.
Recent public opinion research that was conducted by bipartisan pollsters in association with the Colorado College State of the Rockies Project determined that 69% of voters in six western states say that they are more likely to vote for a candidate who supports enhanced protections for public lands. In Montana, 64% of voters agreed with this sentiment, while only 19% disagree. And when we here at CWP saw those numbers, we were quite surprised, and so we wanted to launch an effort to educate our leaders that conservation is a winning issue based on those numbers.
Is this meant for voters, or is it meant for people seeking public office?
I think it's both. I think overall we would say that it's our elected officials. For example, our advertisements are running in Washington, D.C. almost exclusively. We want to tell those folks who are representing we Westerners in Congress and in other elected office that land conservation is important to voters out in the West, and especially in places like Montana and Colorado. But at the same time, you know, it's a completely public campaign, and we also want to show the public that this is a winning issue as well.
Conservation, I think, is an easy issue for those left of center on the political spectrum. Does this have any influence for those independents? Does it get much traction from those on the right to far right?
Yeah, absolutely. Conservation is not and never will be a partisan issue. I mentioned the fact that 69% of Westerners in the public opinion research say that they're more likely to vote for a candidate who supports enhancing protections for some public lands. That sentiment is not just limited to liberals or those who are left of center. In fact, that same poll showed that 59% of Western Republicans and 67% of Western independents agreed. So it certainly is not partisan, as many of us who live out here realize, but sometimes issues when they filter up to Washington, D.C. become partisan no matter what. And I think it's also important to note that as part of the Winning the West campaign, we are not endorsing any candidates. This is an educational effort across the political ideologies and spectrums that voters overwhelmingly care about conserving our public lands and waters, and that sentiment is not specific to any one party or ideology, but in fact we see a majority of voters across all parties and ideologies saying that they agree.
Why launch this campaign now? Is it strictly election-driven through November, or is there something else at risk that's prompted this? Maybe ongoing energy development, which is always a controversial issue out here in the West?
You know, certainly there is the component of the midterm elections going on right now, and as such, there's a fair bit of chatter about public lands issues and energy issues, as you mentioned. I think there have been a number of other interesting developments over the past year or so that have prompted us to launch this campaign. One of those was the government shutdown last fall that I think really resonated with folks out here in the West. Another question that was asked in the Colorado College State of the Rockies poll was about the closing of national parks and public lands to visitors, and voters very strongly agreed the shutdown hurt small businesses and the economy. Westerners realize that public lands are a way of life, and sometimes we don't see that way of life and those priorities get reflected with the policies that occur in Washington, D.C.
And plus there's chatter about making federal lands state responsibilities.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're especially seeing that in Montana these days. In 2013, a bill was passed that created an interim study on public land management, and so you've seen that debate occur in the Montana legislature over the past year or so, and it will likely continue over the coming year as we debate whether the federal government or the states are better at managing public lands. And I think that context is also, as you mentioned, is very important to voters' priorities at this point.
Jessica Goad, Advocacy Director for the Center for Western Priorities, thank you so much for talking today.
Absolutely, Ed. Thanks.
A 14-year-old boy drowned while trying to swim to an island in a small lake just southwest of Miles City. Police say the boy was swimming in Spotted Eagle Lake yesterday afternoon when he became fatigued and slipped under the water. Several state and local agencies responded. Fire crews brought the boy to shore, where medical crews performed CPR. He was taken to the hospital in Miles City, where he was pronounced dead. The boy's name is being withheld while family members are notified.
A former Yellowstone County jail inmate is suing the county, alleging his throat cancer went undiagnosed for nearly a year, despite his numerous complaints about pain and a lump in his throat. The Billings Gazette reports 50-year-old Fred Everett Miller was diagnosed in September 2010, after he had been transferred to a jail in Missoula. Attorney Alex Raitt of Livingston said Miller is unable to eat solid food and has a permanent feeding tube. Miller was arrested on a theft charge in September 2009. The lawsuit said he complained at least 17 times over the next 11 months about a lump in his throat, severe pain, and bleeding without being diagnosed or treated. County officials declined to comment. Wright says an amended complaint was filed in December of 2013. A trial date is set for October 2015.
A Wolf Point man faces federal charges for a series of fights in March that left one man dead, another severely beaten, and a third with a broken nose. The Great Falls Tribune reports 42-year-old Mervyn Clarence Hale Jr. pleaded not guilty yesterday to second-degree murder, assault with a dangerous weapon, and assault resulting in serious bodily injuries. Court records say witnesses told investigators that Hale beat, kicked, and stomped on Laramie Wallace repeatedly early on March 19th, leaving a small shoe print on his face. The next day, Wallace went to the hospital where he was treated for the assault and checked for head injuries. Court records say Wallace died the next day of blood loss due to a lacerated liver. Hale is charged with beating another man so badly he needed plates in his forehead and his jaw wired.
Montana Supreme Court says three-time Tour de France winner Greg LeMond has a valid claim in a property dispute at the members-only Yellowstone Club Ski and Golf Resort. Left unresolved, this multi-million dollar question of just how much his claim is worth. The High Court's Monday ruling comes 7 years after LeMond sued the club and founder Tim Blixeth for breaching the terms of a 2000 real estate transaction. Justices upheld a lower court ruling saying LeMond deserves compensation for the breach of contract. But justices questioned whether he should be awarded five lots valued at up to $3 million each in a case that began with an argument over a single lot with a $1 million lot. They remanded that part of the case to District Judge Lauren Tucker to reconsider.
In tonight's forecast, west of the Divide this evening remains partly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Expect lows in the mid-40s to lower 50s. Tomorrow it'll be mostly sunny with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs in the upper 80s to mid-90s. In central Montana tonight, look for partly cloudy skies with isolated showers and thunderstorms and lows in the 50s. Wednesday should be sunny with highs in the 80s. In southwest Montana tonight, it'll be mostly cloudy in the evening with scattered showers and thunderstorms throughout the night, lows 45 to 50. On Wednesday, look for partly cloudy skies with highs in the upper 70s to mid 80s. And now for the editorial comments of Dan Gallagher.
This is Dan Gallagher with Veterans Viewpoint. I read a story in last Saturday's newspaper headlined, "Lawmakers Seek to Lower Cost of Vets Bill." Three emotions immediately hit me. One was anger. Two was an overwhelming urge to say, "I told you so." And three was a sense of being had and used. Veterans, notably combat veterans, are going to continue to wait for medical treatment because lawmakers are going to continue to treat veterans' care as if it were some sort of a math problem. Any thinking person or patriotic American is angry that the health system created to care for our honored veterans is broken, and they're angry about the inevitable cluster flub that has arisen from political and administrative callousness, stinginess, and ineptitude. The I told you so impulse? Well, I and a lot of other people predicted at the time that campaigning congressmen who had never previously uttered the word veteran or who had never cast an I vote on their behalf were clamoring for Shinseki's head, and that the feigned outrage was nothing more than political game playing that would soon subside, bringing back the prioritizing of spending cuts in programs designed to help those whom these same budget cutters lovingly call our heroes. Didn't I say it would happen? And it didn't even take 3 months. It took less time for the fiscal zealots to turn their backs on veterans than the waiting period for the veterans at the VA clinic in Phoenix had been. I told you so. I really did. And being had, well, let me explain in as brief and pointed a manner as I can. Most of the politicians trying to limit spending for veterans' care preach a philosophy of citizen responsibility. They consider persons who did not or perhaps cannot repay loans as derelicts, and their rhetoric would lead us to believe that all of America's fiscal problems could be blamed on welfare queens, although not their own corporate welfare friends, and on those seeking a higher minimum wage. Yet these same politicians, with flags on their lapels and magnetic yellow ribbons on their cars, can look us in the eyes and tell Americans that our government does not have an absolute moral and legal responsibility to honor a most binding and sacred indebtedness, to pay for the care and reparation of the lives of those that they themselves sent into battle to be sacrificed to the demons of war. Now, I love and believe in this country and think it would be a historical tragedy to see it laid economically impotent. But when these self-important, duplicitous mouthpieces of perfidy say that paying the required veterans' bill would bankrupt our country, that the money just isn't there, I want to say to them, so what? You ran up the bill, and now pay it. Maybe next time you'll think long and hard before starting a war. Okay, that's overstated, but it is something that the budget cutters and the American citizenry needs to hear. There, I said it. Now, stepping back from my tirade, I want to remind listeners of an important anniversary, important to America, and especially to America's Vietnam veterans. August 2nd, 2014, will be the 50th anniversary of the Gulf of Tonkin incident, the closest thing to a Pearl Harbor that exists for the Vietnam War. While there's much skepticism about the truth of U.S. military reports in this incident, it's apparently true that the destroyer USS Maddox was attacked by North Vietnamese PT boats near the coast of North Vietnam on August 2, 1964. 2 days later, on August 4th, an incident of far less authenticity supposedly occurred in which the Maddox and the destroyer C. Turner Joy were both attacked by North Vietnamese naval forces. Now, North Vietnamese entire military structure was waging war on South Vietnam at the time, and the South Vietnamese Navy was trying to interdict North Vietnamese munition shipments to the South. The U.S. Navy had begun assisting South Vietnam in that effort when the alleged attack occurred. Whether the attack was all a lie or not is now much less important than the fact that this incident of 50 years ago led to the Senate-passed Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, which enabled President Johnson to escalate our involvement in Vietnam, an involvement that changed American history and the lives of the young men and women who would fight that war. In the upcoming year and more, there will be much media attention given to the Vietnam War's 50th anniversary, and many of my upcoming commentaries will address that topic. And another thing, Jan Silby, the producer-director of Quiet Island Films, will be showing the film Beyond the Divide in several cities around the country, beginning on Veterans Day 2014, in conjunction with this 50th anniversary of the beginning of the Vietnam War. This movie was filmed in Missoula in western Montana and is about the struggle and animosity between Vietnam veterans and the peaceniks of the 1960s and 70s and how much of the chasm between those two groups is gradually being bridged through the efforts of just a few people from both sides. Many of you saw Beyond the Divide at the Wilma in February and then a week later at the Top Hat during this year's Big Sky Film Festival. So be ready to hear more and more about what happened 50 years ago that so affected and changed how Americans have come to view war. Wow, 50 years already? This is Dan Gallagher with Veterans Viewpoint.
Dan Gallagher is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Corin Cates-Kearney.
And I'm Conrad Scheid. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.